Full Harvest, a collection of audio stories and poems inspired by the landscape of the South Downs National Park. Episode 10, Perspective, by Lucy Flannery.
The sun rises, warming my eastern slopes and lighting up my beach crown. The flints of the mizmaize gleam white in the pearly dawn. Pigs grunt as people emerge sleepy-eyed from the round huts of the fort, and at the foot of the 102 steps, the first dog walker appears, phone in hand. A young woman leaves the chapel. She has prayed all night on her knees to St. Catherine that she may be blessed with the child for which she longs. As the sun emerges fully from the horizon, the distant hum of traffic begins. I see my brother Giles to the north, and sense all my brothers and sisters stretching far, far away to the east. We are an ancient community, and as young as springtime. The warming air provides an upcurrent for a pair of chalk hill blue butterflies to dance upon. At my foot, in the dry valley, labourers sweat as they dig the plague pits that will receive the dead of the city, and beside them, 20th century sheep crop the turf. Ants busy themselves in the tussocks that have never been disturbed by any human endeavour. They describe this land as having never been worked. The ants would disagree. My dearest companion, the river, speeds on its way in its several courses, including the one known as the navigation. A couple in matching North Face jackets navigate my North Face. The man says, "I'm itching to see the view." I have heard this joke before. So has his wife. At the ditch by the ancient rampart, they pause for breath and turn to scan the floodplain. She is experiencing a private flood, one of fear. No longer can she ignore those words, early onset dementia, that swirl and ripple through her thoughts. Her dear companion will soon be navigating a dark, unmapped future. But for now, they are here, in this moment, on this hill, together. The Lieutenant Colonel directs his men to begin their work. An entire beech copse must be planted before nightfall. There must be no shirking. At stake is a wager, certainly, but more importantly, so is his honour as an officer of the Gloucestershire Regiment. The runners pace each other step for step. This is the best time to come, before the sun is too hot and the hard slog of the climb too wearisome. No need to confer. Long practice makes them stop at exactly the same spot by the same tree, where they sip from their recycled water bottles and look at the world. As the sun climbs higher into the blue, Thomas Cromwell's men stride purposefully towards the summit, mopping their brows. They do not pause, but straight away begin to tear down the tiny chapel. It's lost the inevitable outcome of a petulant king's break with Rome. On the morning of his wedding, a young man navigates the unicursal path of the labyrinth to the centre and back out again to the beginning, before hurrying down to the city, the register office at the top of the high street, and the start of married life. The teenager walks his dog, as he did yesterday, and will tomorrow, every day, for 6 years. His aching heart finds solace in this daily ritual, away from the cares of home. The mad joy of the spaniel sends up a protest of crows. In the wood at the summit, the teenager listens to the tree's private promise. They whisper to him of unconditional love. The runners descend the further slope, avoiding the white cattle who pause in their grazing to watch them go by, amazed by the speed of the activity. A small boy sits hunched in the shade of a bush, his gaze travelling over the valley. The one place his eye resolutely avoids is the distant roof of the school, where he should be right now, sitting at the third desk from the window, reciting his times tables. But the teacher is so hateful, and he has endured so much, that he can take no more humiliation. Later, he will go back down and mingle with the rest of the class as they emerge from the school gates, and wander home as though he had spent the most unexceptional day, chatting about marbles and football and Elvis Presley. At times in that class, he felt as though he was living through some unending purgatory. Up here, on what feels like the roof of the world, he can see that there is less than a month to go before freedom, the long summer holidays, and a fresh start. The sun rolls around to the south. A buzzard flies through the chalk valley. In the tiny cemetery beside the chapel, a daughter lays a posy of flowers on a fresh grave, hears her mother's voice, remembers her laugh, and is comforted. On the grass mound that was once St. Catherine's Chapel, a mother sits and remembers her daughter, buried thousands of miles away, taking comfort from a life lived on its own terms. "Which way?" asks the young woman at the brink of the turf maze. "Depends whether you're town or college," replies her lover. "Citizens outside in, scholars inside out." They set off from each starting point and meet halfway in a kiss. They retrace their steps, swinging a three-year-old, their youngest grandchild, between their outstretched arms. An ass labours up the path, bearing stone for the new chapel being built at the summit. Further down the slopes, the same ass carries the priest who will perform the ceremony of dedication to St. Catherine. The priest is very particular about his dress. He holds the cloth high to avoid it trailing in the chalky dust. The level of the river climbs, rises higher, bursts its banks, and floods the surrounding fields. Children play in the water meadows, gathering wildflowers as cattle graze, the grass made luscious by the mineral-rich soil. The course of the river is altered and altered again to provide waterheads for mills, to irrigate crops, and to accommodate the canal. But the river itself is unchanging, eternal. It finds its own way, its crystal waters sparkling, its temperature constant, its purpose clear. This complex system of carrier channels and mainstreams has seen everything, from poo sticks to king's fleets, and received them all with the same equanimity. It goes about its own business, only occasionally asserting its authority. The woman with the grey eyes unpacks her picnic. A Marks and Spencer sandwich and a 1.5 glass bottle of sparkling wine. She toasts her father, whose 90th birthday would have been today. "Here's to you, Dad." Her eyes drink in the view that they shared so many times. "Whatever your problems, whatever your cares, up here you can just rise above them. What it does is, it gives you a sense of perspective," she says out loud, and smiles. A grim-faced company take defensive positions by the ditch. They are tense, ready, determined. There is a sudden yell, and from their hiding places behind the bushes, the enemy tribe burst into view and into the attack. Whooping wild war cries, they hurtle up the slope, heedless of the many missiles thrown at them. The battle is short, but deadly. Many lie slain in the merciless noon sun. The dead bodies rouse themselves, stretch and yawn, and there is some bickering about who actually won and whether some of those killed hadn't actually cheated and got back up again to carry on fighting. The two tribes head downhill towards their waiting dinners and a clip round the ear for being late. This battle will be fought again tomorrow. Loving hands restore the mizmaze, its path now barely discernible in the grass, overgrown from disuse. Slowly it comes back to life, bigger and better than before. A moron on a moped tries to follow its route, the tinny whine of its engine assaulting the air. He is escorted down to ground level, but remains defiant. Walkers exchange greetings as their paths cross. "Glorious day. Wonderful view. Our first visit. We come here most days. We've travelled 20 miles to be here. We've lived here all our lives." The dig is measured in precise units, marked off in squares of low twine. The archaeologists are excited by each discovery, equal delight taken in decorative brooches and quern stones. Children race around the fort intent on their game. It's so exciting they become quite heedless of where they run. A ewer of water is knocked to the ground and a slap narrowly avoided. Water is precious, and the daily journey to fetch it an arduous task which falls to the womenfolk. The teenage dog walker places his hand by the hole in the tree, the singe marks clear around the absence. He leans his head against the trunk and weeps. Hand in hand, the father and his grey-eyed child climb to their favourite spot. She confides that her friend has suddenly decided that she likes their other friend better, and this is causing her great distress because it's not fair. Her father sympathises, but is sure all will be well. And for now, aren't they lucky to have this lovely place to come to? He finds that whatever your problems, whatever your cares, up here you can just rise above them. She nods solemnly. Toilers with spades and trowels consult their plan. They cut into the turf, revealing the chalk below, the same chalk that cuts a swathe across the land all the way to the sea. The design they create loops and swirls, the path curving and coiling back upon itself until reaching its ultimate destination within its own innermost space. This original iteration of the mizmaze is secular, recreational. Over centuries, it acquires a spiritual dimension. An old woman chants as she tolls the labyrinth, giving thanks for being alive after 12 months of solitude. In the heat of the afternoon, a marbled white butterfly basks on a fallen log. A gentle breeze ripples through the trees. Sunlight splinters into 1,000 diamonds on the surface of the water below. A rounded gentleman, asleep on the grass, snores and wakes himself up. The young wife picks a laborious path to the summit, her task made harder by the precious bundle in her arms. She enters the chapel eagerly, offering thanks to the saint for her beautiful baby girl. The grey-eyed young woman buries her head in her father's chest. Her tears wet his jacket. She is worried about exam results. He is confident her fears are misplaced. He bids her dry her eyes and look at the view. Doesn't she feel better just for being here? Dad, she snarls, I love you, but if you mention perspective, I will push you down this hill. They both laugh, then head for home, where a letter awaits with joyous news. Diggers dig. Builders build. Planters plant. The centuries of labour across my acres rivals the industry of the ants in their anthills. If all the sweat shed on my slopes came together, it would form a river the equal of the one at my side. The tears would form a lake. We are all navigating something. A path, a labyrinth, a relationship, even our own existence. We try to engineer the straightest route, but despite our best efforts, obstacles and floods get in our way. And sometimes the shortest distance turns out not to be the best route after all. We all have to navigate our challenges and life the best we can. Late in the afternoon, as the sun starts its slow decline into the west, a woodpecker in the clump taps out an insistent percussion. The twin spikes of a frog orchid unfurl their green blooms, and a former moped rider comes to the labyrinth to whisper an apology. In the crimson and rose sunset, firefighters battle to save the ancient beach. A careless tea-time fire has spread up the roots. The scream of chainsaws startle the crows as the damage is cut out, leaving a gaping hole, but a tree still standing nonetheless, still offering consolation and forgiveness. An owner calls to her missing dog. She peers short-sightedly into the deepening gloom. Where can it have got to? Two youths sleep off the effects of a first can of cider, overwhelmed by its potency. One is awoken by a dog licking his face. He is hard-pressed to say which is worse, the nausea or the wetness. The dog runs off, rejoins his owner, who demands to know where on earth he's been. A group of children from the Swanmore estate persuade themselves that the clump is haunted by Wattle, whom they cannot say. They dare each other to go up after dark, and the trees obligingly whistle in the wind. The children run downhill, shrieking, delighted at being terrified. A 70-year-old man by the river looks up at the now unreachable height of the wood and smiles. The weary soldiers make their way down to the camp, lanterns lighting their path. The Lieutenant Colonel is satisfied. An entire stand of trees has been planted. A single day's work, but its effect will last for centuries. Generations to come will be grateful for its shade. The dog walker looks out across the valley and then up at the stars. A teenager no longer, and accompanied by no dog now, but by a different, dearly loved companion. This is the place then. This is it. I can see why it's so special. It got me through the dark times. And now here you are again, in the good times. He nods. They join hands and slowly head back. Below me, far down in the valley, an owl flies, its eyes huge, its wings completely silent. A fox stands motionless, its eyes reflecting the yellow light of a supermoon. The stars shine, and the itching flows on. I stand square, rooted in time.
Perspective was written and read by Lucy Flannery. It was commissioned and produced by Applause in partnership with the South Downs National Park Authority. We hope you enjoyed listening to this episode. There are 9 more podcasts for you to enjoy, so please subscribe to this series.